Welcome to Sundays with the Modern. My name is Erin Starr-White. I'm an assistant curator of education here. I'm really glad you're here today. This afternoon, we are privileged to have our director, Dr. Marla Price, here to talk to us about her changing perspective on the building, which was designed by Japanese architect Tadao Ando, built 10 years ago this month. Of course, that makes this talk all the more special, and I promised Marla we'd keep it really brief, so I'm going to turn it over to you. We'll get started.
Thank you. Thank you. I think a lot of you have done this tour with me in the past, so please stop me at any point if you have questions or things that I'm not talking about. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have. But I want to talk about the building since we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of the opening of this building exactly 10 years ago. First, a little background, which I think many of you know, that this is the oldest art museum in Texas, chartered in 1892. And opened for business in the first decade of the 20th century downtown, sharing a space with the Portwood Public Library. It then went on to have another location downtown, which was built during the Works Progress Administration. And then finally in 1954, the museum had its own building here in the Cultural District, which is now the Community Arts Center. That building was expanded in the 60s to include the Scott Theater, and it took on pretty much the shape that it now has today. So when I came to Fort Worth, which was at the end of the 80s, that was where I came to work as a curator. And the building at that point was being severely tested. We didn't have room to do a lot of the things that we wanted to do. We didn't have an auditorium. We had only 10,000 square feet of gallery space versus 50,000 in this building. So our education classroom was just a single room. And by the mid-90s, we had waiting lists for a lot of the programs that we were doing, or else we were having to turn away programs. We weren't able to do it all. So in 1996, this property was bought by Ann Marion, who was chairman of the museum at the time. And I'll never forget, I was home on a rainy day. I've told this story many times. It was February. It was raining and freezing, and a Saturday, and the phone rang, and it was Mrs. Marion, and she hardly ever calls me on weekends. So the first thing she said was, "Are you sitting down?" And all I could think of was, "Oh, my God, where's my resume? I'm in trouble now." Anyway, she said, "I bought the apartments." And I said, "What?" She said, "I've bought the apartments." I said, "What apartments?" She said, "The ones across from the Kimball." Then I realized what she was saying. And that was a really, really, really exciting day. Those apartments had been built at the end of the war, and they were about half occupied at this time. So we gave the tenants a year's notice. We paid all their moving expenses, and we did everything we could to help them ease their way, you know, out of the apartments. And then we donated everything to Habitat for Humanity that was left from the apartments, and this was our new building site. So we needed an architect, and I think that everyone associated with the project at all thought that Ando would be a great choice. There was only one problem. None of us had ever seen an actual building by Ando. We'd only seen photographs. And as you know, buildings are very photogenic. So we went to Japan, and then Michael, and our curator, and I went to Europe as well, and we made a research effort to see every museum in the world that we were interested in that we hadn't seen, and we took notes, and at the end of it, we invited six architects to make proposals, as you know, and Ando was chosen as the unanimous choice. And this was in May of 97. The building that we're in is basically the building that he proposed. There are a few changes, and if you want to come over to the windows here, I'll talk a little bit about that. Ando's concept for the building is that this front area, this lobby area, would function very much like a piazza does in a European town, that the public functions of the building would be all accessible off of this space. And so that is the way it is organized. You have the shop, the main restrooms, the coat check on the second floor over here, you have the education center, you have the auditorium, the cafe, and then the executive offices on this side. And underlying this was a feeling that we wanted to offer a center for the community, a center of activity where members of the community would want to be. And so the auditorium was going to be used for film, music, and lectures, and, you know, a wide range of programs, not always just art historical in nature. And the idea behind that was not only to engage the community and bring them into the building, but we thought the building and the activities would bring them to the art. We were very aware that, you know, of the three art museums in Fort Worth, our exhibitions, our collection, is the most challenging for people. And so we wanted to build our audiences in many different ways, and this was one of them. So that is what we have. And then once you enter the galleries, we didn't want any distraction from the works of art. No kiosk, no bookstore, no coffee bar, nothing. Just you and the works of art. So Ondo first proposed four of these gallery pavilions. Some of you who are here then will remember that. When we looked at the overall plan, that put the fourth pavilion basically on Camp Bowie Boulevard. It put it right at the edge of the site. And so we decided, for aesthetic reasons and practical reasons, that we didn't really need that fourth pavilion. The same was true of this lobby area. His original design had it 24 feet wider. So it would have been between these two pillars, it would have added that much more space to this lobby. And this is a vast lobby now, you can imagine. So we decided that was probably too large a scale to manage easily. So we cut that down. And then really the other only major change in Ondo's design was he originally had these magnificent columns on the inside of the pavilions, inside the glass. And so Michael and I talked with him about it and convinced him that that was wonderful space for works of art, and asked him if there's any way we could reconfigure it so that we didn't lose that space by having the columns. And he came up with this magnificent idea of putting them in the water. And if anything is the signature of this building, now I think it is those columns. Yes. This lobby, east-west. So any questions about it? Do you all know about the concrete and how it's done? And any questions about that? Okay. Well, let's go in the galleries then. Okay, just before we go in the galleries, I think a lot of you know that are docents here. On these drawings on the wall right here, these are Ondo's very first sketches when his first trip to Fort Worth, when he was thinking about the building before he had received the commission. These were his very first ideas. And if you want to come over a little closer, you can see that he's sketched the skyline of Fort Worth and how it would look from this site. He's very attentive to the Kimball and the scale of the Kimball as it's going to be next to this museum. And just his very, very, very first ideas, I think it's so interesting to see. One of my favorite stories about Ondo was after we went to Japan and we saw a number of his buildings, we realized that many of them are in very spectacular sites. They're on mountaintops or, seascape cliffs by the sea or, you know, some really special environment. And so we were meeting with him, and I said, Mr. Ondo, I'm sorry, I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed in our site because we don't have an ocean, we don't have any mountains. And he looked at me and he said, the Kimball is the mountain. So let's go in this way. Okay, this marks the entrance to the galleries. As you know, they're on two levels, and at this point, you will not encounter anything but works of art in a restroom until you come back out into the lobby. This curved wall is a kind of a signature element that Mr. Ondo likes to use. You can imagine it's very difficult to pour this kind of high finish architectural concrete. You can imagine how much more difficult it is to do it in a curved wall like this. And you all remember that this is how the concrete comes out of the forms. This has not been polished, oiled, buffed. It's simply washed with water when the wooden forms come off. And you can see the concrete pouring at the Kimball now. It's really interesting to see it again. But Ondo saw this curved wall as an introduction to the galleries, a sort of element that will lead you into the galleries. It repeats the curve of the cafe, the elliptical shape of the cafe. So it's almost like a punctuation. Those two are like punctuation marks. I think this space illustrates something that I feel is very important about the building, and that is the building allows the art to sort of speak for itself. And Michael, our curator who oversees the installations in the galleries, is not afraid to leave a wall like that empty. I can't think of another museum in the United States that would do that. So that the Kiefer and the two works by Kiefer have this incredible dialogue that is not interrupted by anything on that wall. And it's something that many, many people comment on when they come into the building. The Kiefer was not commissioned. You all know that. I'm always getting the question of whether that was a special commission. We had bought it in London before we were sure that we were going to have this gallery. So it was just a happy meeting of art and space. Now, when we were planning the galleries, one of the things that we did, we traveled with Mr. Ondo and we looked at other museums with him. And we spent a lot of time in Houston at the Menil collection in all of their buildings. He's a great admirer of Renzo Piano and they're very close personal friends. And one of the lessons we learned there, everybody loves that museum. And so we tried to analyze, what is it that makes us love it so much? And one of the answers that we came up with is that the galleries have a changing scale. So you're always refreshed. You're not moving from one room to another with the rooms being exactly the same size. And if you think back on it, you'll in the Menil, you'll have the experience of a big abstract painting, and then you'll round the corner and there'll be little objects in a case, and then you'll go into another room with a big painting. So we wanted to have some change in scale in our galleries, and this was Ondo's design. The galleries go from 40 feet wide, which is where we are, to 24, and they move that way throughout the entire building. So let's go in here. When we first opened this building, I got asked to give a lot of talks about the building, and so I had a little talk that I used to do that was called Flexibility is Not Always a Virtue. Because you often hear people when they start to think about a new museum, they say, we want the maximum flexibility, you know, we want to be able to do anything with the building. Well, if you get the maximum flexibility, you get a convention center. You get a big hangar-like space. So we didn't want that. We wanted beautiful architectural spaces that would let the works of art speak for themselves and that artists would want to have their work displayed in, if that's grammatically correct. But this is a concrete building, so you have to make some trade-offs when you build concrete. These door openings, we can vary them a little bit, but we can't take that wall out, for example. We can change your pattern as you walk through the galleries, but we can't tear down walls. Because the walls support the structure, they are the structure, they also have the air conditioning and the heating and the wiring and everything in them. But I hope you feel that the variation as you move from going from this space into this really very soaring 40-foot space, you know, it's exciting. It surprises you a little bit. And he lets you see the structure. The concrete that you see is the actual roof. It's not a cosmetic treatment of concrete. And then he designed these heavy panels that hang down in the center that provides the natural lighting, but it also houses all the mechanical equipment that is needed in a room like this, you know, with the air conditioning, the security, the wiring, et cetera, et cetera. You don't want any of that in the concrete, because if you have a problem, you'd have to jackhammer the concrete to fix it. So part of the idea of this gallery, there are three double-height spaces in the museum, and part of Ando's idea there was to let you see the vertical structure, how it goes vertically as well as horizontally. It's also to allow some natural light to come down to the first floor. And this room is, and if you all, I think you all are have seen how many fantastic things have been in this room, from Ron Muick's giant baby to Martin Purrier's big wheel. This piece looks fabulous. The Martin Bradford was in here. It's a wonderful, wonderful room, I think. Any questions? You all are very quiet. This is a technical detail which I like to point out about Ando's practicality. This is the entrance out to the loading dock. So one of the greatest challenges with the modern museum with works of this scale is how do you safely bring them in and out of the building, safely for the art and safely for the people who are bringing them. And he designed this fantastic setup where the loading dock, this goes out to the loading dock, and then the freight elevator is behind the Rauschenberg. So these giant crates can come in without making turns and twists, which is where you often get into problems. He doesn't get enough credit, I think, for his practical designs. Let's see, what should we talk about next? Should we look at the Jenny Holzer? Why not, right? Yeah, this is intense. Yes, I think a lot of you know that Michael's history with Jenny goes back quite a ways. He was the commissioner of the U.S. Pavilion at the Venice Biennale, and he chose Jenny as the artist to represent the United States. And so they spent several months together in Venice working on her pavilion, and he has stayed in touch with her ever since. And from the time that he's been here, we've talked about wanting a piece by Jenny. We just had to wait for the time and the finances and all of that to come together. So when we started thinking about the 10th anniversary, this was top of the list. And then when she came down and liked this idea in this space, and we realized the effect that it was going to have, it was a natural fit, and we've been very excited about it. She's been working on this for about, I think it's about 2 years.
It'll be a permanent location here.
It is. I would say semi-permanent. I mean, we own it now. We can move it, but why would we? I mean, it's so beautiful here. We can move it if we need to.
It's great to see it there.
Yeah. If you all haven't seen it at night from across the pond, I heartily recommend that. It makes this building look like it's about six stories high. It's really an incredible reflection that goes on.
Looks like shimmering water.
Yeah, yeah. And that was her idea, is that it would look like it was falling into the water.
If people stepped on that, they'd damage it, wouldn't
they? Yes. I mean, it's sturdier than you think it is, but you can't walk on it. Okay, let's go back out. The one thing this does is you can't, you know, we used to be able to make that loop, and now we have to go back out this way. No, it's a 12, I think it's a 12-hour cycle. And it's in Spanish and English. I haven't seen the Spanish since we've been in here, but Okay, any questions about any of this works in these galleries that you want me to answer? Everybody knows the story of where we got the Warhol and the Liechtenstein. Does everybody know that story?
No.
There was a postman, United States postman. What was his name? I'm just to look it up. Excuse me. Vernon Nickel. He was a U.S. mailman, and he bought that painting and this painting by Liechtenstein out of these artists' first exhibitions at the Leo Castelli Gallery in New York. And he paid $1 a week or $5 a week, we're not really sure, but he paid out over a considerable period of time. And he lived in New Mexico, and so some of the people who were involved with the museum came to know him. And when Henry Hopkins was director of the museum, he got to know him, and he offered these two works to the museum for purchase. And both works were bought for $200,000. Both. The Warhol in particular is probably impossible to evaluate now because it comes from the period of his career when he was still actually painting. And I mean, $150 million is probably where you have to start. So it was really quite an extraordinary thing. He has recently died. He died not too long after we opened this building, but he couldn't come to the opening, but I sent him photographs, you know, and he got to see it. I don't think he had anything else. Yeah. So what would you like for me to talk about in here? Let's talk about the Martin Currier. You know, we have a lot of things in the collection that are really beloved, but I don't think there's one that's more beloved than this. This is by Martin Currier, as you all know, and this came about before we were opening the building. Michael went to upstate New York to visit Martin and talk to him. And see, we were interested in acquiring something and, you know, see what he had. And he had this work in the studio, but he told Michael that it was off limits, it was not available. So Michael really didn't like that answer, and he kept working on it. So he finally convinced, he came back to Fort Worth, and he had our installation crew make a mock-up of this ladder out of PVC pipe, you know, that white piping. We had tons of that on the building site, as you can imagine. So they made a mock-up of it, and they realized that it fit perfectly in this space. So he convinced Martin to just lend it to us for the opening, and then he could have it back right after the, you know. That was 10 years ago. So, of course, when it went up, it was just breathtaking, and when Martin saw it, he was really, really thrilled, and so he did allow us to purchase it, and I'm happy to say that it's probably one of the single most beloved things in the collection. But it was very interesting. I've always said since then that I think Michael could sell snow to, you know, people in Alaska.
Was this space seen as being kind of a challenging exhibition space prior to realizing this piece? Or?
No, I think this space really came out of one of our trips to Japan when we went to Naoshima Island, where Ando had designed a contemporary arts museum, which has a hotel attached to it. It's now grown even more than when we were there, and they've added new installations. There's an installation of Monet water lilies, and I've forgotten everything. There's just a lot that they've added there. It's a spectacular site. It's owned by the family that owns Bonessa, which is the Crayola of Japan. So they make educational art materials. and they commissioned Ondo to do a museum for their collection with a hotel attached. And then they've expanded it around the island. So there we saw one of the features of the building is they left a lot of the walls concrete, and on some of the exterior walls they had hung works of art on the concrete outside. They were particularly Sugimoto black and white photographs. And part of the experience of it was that you would watch those photographs slowly be destroyed by the elements because they were outside. So it was really very sort of poignant and dramatic. But I was crazy about the way works of art looked hanging against the concrete. So we decided to leave this room without any white walls and see how we lived with it and how we liked it. And of course, we've loved it. So it just provides another angle into Ondo's aesthetic. But this piece just looks has always looked spectacular in here. Yes.
Was Ondo aware of the entire permanent collection?
Yeah, he was aware. Yes, I mean we had given him briefing books, and you know we had taken him through the vaults, and so he had a good idea. A lot of the great pieces that we acquired, this for example, we were acquired while he was working on the building. You know, so we bought some major pieces just for the opening of the building. This one, the Richard Serra outside, the Francis Bacon things. So. Things were coming into the collection while he was working on it. Okay, shall we go upstairs?
Should we go which way? The far way? That's
everybody okay to go up the stairs?
There's
an elevator right at the other end here.
Right here?
Right, straight down there. Otherwise, we'll go around to this way and go upstairs. Excuse me.
Any chance that cause sculpture in bronze is going to be there?
No, I'll say something when we get upstairs because several people have asked me. The water looks like the Atlantic Ocean today.
Without any sunshine.
Well, it's supposed to be a cold front at 2 o'clock. Yeah.
It's going to get really cold. Like I heard down there. Shall we? Yeah.
At the top of the stairs is a new Dan Flavin piece, and you all have this, don't you? Okay. This staircase was a challenge, trying to figure out what to do with this. Ondo's original idea was a sort of a long sloping ramp, and we convinced him that we would have dead skateboarders at the bottom of the ramp and that we really couldn't do that. So he luckily took our advice and put in this very elegant stair.
It is elegant.
It's kind of a hidden secret of the building. People love it when they find it. And here's a chance to glimpse our bass boat, which we bought after we opened the building and realized we needed a way to pick out leaves and dead animals from the pond. So this, of course, is one of the new acquisitions for the 10th anniversary. And it's dedicated, the title is Untitled for You, Leo. That's Leo Castelli, the dealer, the late, great dealer in New York. And this is Dan Flavin, of course, from 1978. And then Larry Bell, the California minimalist, is the other artist in the room. I think this is an sort of an archetypal Michael Opping room. It's just absolutely great. You have total immersion in two works of art. You know, it allows you to completely focus and have some dialogue between the two. And he's not afraid to leave the room for you to move around. Yeah. Okay, what would you like to talk about up here?
The new one.
I love
this view. Yeah. Yes, I remember when this was pretty much finished, and I remember just being knocked out by how beautiful these hallways were. And I remember asking Mr. Ando, I said, you know, did you know that hallway was going to be so beautiful? I mean, I was just completely astounded. And he said, yes. And he always saw every part of the building. He saw about 90% of it exactly the way it would look, which is kind of amazing when you think of it. What was your question? I just forgot.
I was asking about the cause.
Oh, the cause out front. That belongs to a private collector, and it's touring, and we signed up to have it here, so it goes away in a couple of weeks, unfortunately. But we are it's not available. We did inquire most energetically, but we are talking with Brian, and I think we will come up with a better alternative, hopefully. But it can't stay. So a lot of people have gotten very attached to it. Well, we've already done that, didn't we? So let's go down here. This is one of my favorite works in the collection, actually. I wonder if I should say something about these. You all know about the docents. You all know about these. I think this is always nice when you're on the second floor to sort of pause and look at these paintings. The Tillers were a prominent but childless couple in Fort Worth, and they were convinced to leave part of their estate to the museum. And really, it was their gift that formed the moment of maturity of the museum, because it was for acquisitions. And so as you walk through the galleries, you'll see the credit line that says Benjamin J. Tiller Trust. And many of the early great works in the collection came through there. Her bequest, he died first, and then she died later. And her bequest required that we exhibit some works from her collection in the building. So that's what these are. And they rotate occasionally. But we are still the beneficiaries of this trust, and will be forever. So it was a great thing. The Warhol Maryland's was bought with the Tiller Trust. The Liechtenstein was bought with the Tiller Trust. I mean, just when you see the credit line, you realize what a great thing it was. How about going outside for a minute?
Okay.
Oh, what a field.
I've been locked out here more than once. Hope somebody has a cell phone. I had to call the front desk where I said, help, I'm on the cell
phone. Ooh, there's snow sky.
Yeah. Let's go over here. I want to show you all something that those of you who have doses probably have already done this, but how are we doing on time? Okay. This is a detail. Ooh, that's loud. This is a detail of the building that I am extremely proud of, which if you look out over this parking lot, you will see that we recessed the parking lot about 10 feet on this edge of the site so that the headlights of the cars would not shine into the visitors of the Kimball.
How kind of.
It was very kind of us, and it was very expensive. And I'm very proud of it, and I never fail to show it when I'm doing the tour.
Did you shared the parking space with them.
Yes, exactly.
We didn't have a choice.
Which was, well, that was very generous of them, because we certainly enjoy having this lot. But you can see, you know, when you look around the edge, you can see how it's recessed. But we didn't want our headlights shining into the, you know, the Kimball visitors when they came and went. So, any questions about this? Everybody knows about the Sarah.
There were other sculptures you had at the old building.
Yeah, some of those are, we haven't decommissioned anything of those. Some of them, it's just a case of trying to decide where their new home should be. We've had a long conversation with Anthony Gormley, and we've been trying to come up with a different work. You remember that work that used to be down at the LB? We couldn't really find a place here that we thought it worked as well. So we've been in a long conversation with him to trade him back that and get something else. We haven't gotten anything yet. I don't know if you remember the George Siegel sculpture with the one-way sign. We've tried to figure out where to put that. At one point, we were going to put it down there on the corner. When we thought about putting it out in front of the building, it became confusing because it looks like a real street sign. So, you know, obviously great caution is being taken to think about where to put these things. We have learned the hard way that people become very emotionally attached to where we put things. And if we then decide to move them, they get very unhappy. So caution is obviously the word. Yeah. Is everybody cold?
Yes.
Okay, let's go back in.
The front came. It's here.
They said it was going down to 20 tonight or something.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go in here. This is a good place to talk just for a minute about the ceilings on the second floor and the difference between the first floor. I've often said, and I'm only half joking, that I thought we should get the Nobel Prize for these ceilings that are in the 24-foot galleries, because it was really a lengthy exploration and process working with Ondo. What we were trying to do at the time, we refer to it as we were trying to solve the Menil problem, because the Menil has gauze across their ceilings with lighting above, and it creates these absolutely beautiful ceilings that gather gigantic dust bunnies. And when we were touring down there with Ondo, the maintenance staff was saying, you know, my gosh, we have to take these things down like every 3 weeks, and it's a nightmare. So we set out with the goal of having the quality of that ceiling with that light, but not having the maintenance issues. So, I'm in this way. So what Ondo came up with, which was really kind of brilliant and very simple, these are aluminum boxes, and they are wrapped with fiberglass-coated fabric. And on the top of the boxes, if you want to pass this around, there's a dot matrix pattern that evens out the light all the way across the span of the space. So the light becomes very even, and then the frame of the box has become the hardware to house cameras, smoke alarms, lighting canisters, so it's very, very practical. They're very lightweight, they're aluminum boxes, and for maintenance, they're just about 6 or 8 inches. And for maintenance, they're lightweight. They lower them down, dust them off, change the light bulbs, and put them right back up.
So each one of these panels is a complete box?
Yes. And it's just so simple, but it works beautifully. And there was only one company in the world that would work on this, and it was a small family-owned company in Germany, outside of Munich, in the mountains. And they built a model, one of our galleries, in their parking lot. And they tested all of his ideas for the ceiling in this model house gallery in the parking lot. And so we must have gone there 5 or 6 times. And I remember the last time we went, it was about to be a blizzard. It was a really cold, dark winter day. And we went into the room, and they hadn't turned any lights on. It was just the natural light, which was not very much because it was so dark. And the room was absolutely beautiful. So we knew. But these were great. And then you've noticed over the grand staircase, it's this same system, only curved. And that's the only curved ceiling in the building, and I think it's probably Mr. Ondo's little homage to the Kimball across, to the vaults of the Kimball across the street. So then in these galleries, this is the same ceiling you saw downstairs in the big gallery with the Ellsworth Kelly, but this shows you the clear story window on the side and how the light comes in and bounces off the concrete of the roof. Okay? And this is our new Bruce Nauman. Most irritating work. This is the new Howard Hodgkin painting, which I'm sure you all have seen. Unfortunately, Howard is not in the best of health. He's having a lot of health issues, and so I hope that he can recover some strength. But I think this is a classic small-scale Hodgkin painting, and it has a great impact, great depth of feeling of depth and space. Almost like a storm emerging out of nowhere or something. It's called ice. And that's Howard next to it, of course. So, questions. Anybody have any questions? I know you must.
Well, could you talk about the trees, all these wall cypresses? Were they on the choice?
We had landscape architects, and now I've forgotten their names, but they were in Houston, weren't they? Yeah. And all of that was a dialogue. The feeling about the bald cypresses was their hardiness and their rapid growth. That's why they were chosen. So I don't like them because they go so bald in the winter, but that was the reason they were. And you may have noticed that we, in the 10 years since we opened, we've been refining the landscape quite a bit. And I was very happy when Ondo was here in October that he was really happy with it, you know. And we'll continue. There are a lot more trees we want to put up. And I'm glad we got rid of the love glass, which I think was a very positive thing. It had seen its day. So the love grass. I don't know if you remember on the university side, we used to have that dried grass, and it had just gotten to be a nightmare to take care of it. It was ugly.
Was there
anything else that Ondo remarked on when he was here in terms of how the building was going on? No, I think he was really, really thrilled. I think he was surprised. And if you look in our calendar, we have that comparison of the front of the building with the trees when it opened and just recently. I think he was really surprised at how much everything had grown in, and he was extremely surprised about how much the neighborhood had developed. because he hadn't seen any of that. And he was very thrilled about that and the fact that there were so many apartments and that people could just walk. So he seemed, you know, really happy. He wants us to find another site to start building our annex. So we're working on that. Yeah, that's... Anything else? I don't know. I really don't know. I have found since we've been working here, though, that it's very hard to sustain a bad mood in this building. You know, you can kind of come to work and like, gah, and it just doesn't last. There's something about the building that, you know, inspires you, it levels you out. I don't know. I have so many favorite things about the building. I couldn't think of one. But I've never seen galleries any better. There are fluorescent fixtures above it. So they obviously are muted through the fabric. But there are fluorescent lights above it so that at night we can have a lit ceiling. There's also a skylight, a central skylight. So you can turn all the electric lights off and still have a very soft natural light that comes through it. Did you see the little photo people were looking at?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, and come back in 10 years. Who knows? Thank you.